to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. Two Montana artists with extensive backgrounds in both classical and jazz music are headed down a new musical highway.
Pianist Phil Auberg and singer Jenny Fleming are melding their talents and vast experience into an exciting new collaboration, the world of popular music.
Pop music, I can't wait to get a chat with you both about this. Jenny and Phil, welcome into the studio.
Hi, thanks.
Thank you.
Now, you both have been recently collaborating on a project, and I'm curious what brought you both together.
A couple of cars, I think. We've known each other for a long time.
We have. I think maybe 15 years.
At least.
And we have a lot of mutual friends, and the music scene in Montana is actually quite small.
Yeah, they do say it's a small town with a long Main Street.
Right.
I returned from the playing at the National Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Elko to immediately start rehearsing with Jenny. So it was two worlds colliding.
Phil, what were you doing at the Elko Poetry Gathering?
I was playing with Métis fiddler Jamie Fox, who I've known since she was 12.
Oh my gosh, I bet that was fun.
It was a blast. It was a blast. And the music is so wonderful. You know? We must have played, 10 times or something during the week. So we had a great time.
So I guess this collaboration with Jenny is not exactly a stretch in terms of the kind of things that you've been doing and collaborating on.
Well, nothing is a stretch anymore for me. Yeah, I've done a lot of stuff. And actually the chance to play with Jenny is really wonderful because we've run in the same circles and we never got to play together. So it was a thrill when she called me and asked.
So here's why I called him and asked. I had three concerts booked with a couple of musicians back to back. And one of the guys called and said, "I am unable to rehearse for any of these concerts." And another guy called and said, "I can't make one of the concerts." Before I just scrapped the whole tour, I made a Hail Mary phone call, totally thinking that he would say no or was busy or whatever. And we had talked over the years about doing, once upon a time it was a recording project that we were gonna do together, and just always keeping our eyes peeled for an opportunity to play together. So I called him and I said, "What's the worst that could happen?" He'd say no. I called him. I said, "Here's my idea. I want to do all original arrangements of pop tunes because that's really what I grew up on and how I really learned to sing was from the radio. I had some great mentors, both in classical music and in jazz. And I knew that he had that background as well, and obviously is still a great player in both of those genres. But I knew that he had a tie to pop music also. And he either was going to love the idea or hate it. And for whatever reason, he said yes. So we got to work. And we have been as irreverent with our choice of music as we could possibly be. There's Alison Krauss, there's Bonnie Raitt, there's Willie Nelson, there's The Kinks, The Band.
Gnarls Barkley. Wow.
What else is in there? Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, we had no plan. We just kind of, we brought in a bunch of pieces.
No rhyme.
Said, "You like this one?" She said, "Yeah, that sounds great."
Yep.
She said, "You like this one?" Yes.
Yeah, you both have a similar affection for pop music. And Jenny, I love the story you told me where you filled a jukebox with Whitney Houston songs and drove most of the bar patrons out the door and figured that if anyone could love Whitney Houston and learn to sing from listening to Michael Jackson and could really appreciate those stories about you, that you knew you'd found a good partner in crime. And I think perhaps Phil fits the bill.
Oh, totally. Did I ever tell you that story?
No, you didn't. But you told me the Def Leppard story. I can't share that one.
Well, yeah, this seems to be music of your youth, Jenny, and you remain really fondly connected to it. Tell me a bit more about this idea that Michael Jackson taught you to sing, for instance.
I think that music hits you in a certain way at a certain age. And for me, of course, that was hours and hours and hours spent in front of the radio in my bedroom, ages 10, 11, 12, 13. And, you know, puberty happens around there. So everything is highly, highly emotional. And even now, I'll hear some of those songs that just meant the world to me in junior high, and they have the same effect. In fact, we're doing one. The Bonnie Raitt song that we do is one that for real chokes me up every time I hear it. And I had to sing this song several times just to not have that feeling as I was singing it with Phil. So there's been some of the rehearsal time that we've spent together is just me trying to get a handle on myself.
So when I get into a sort of emotional funk and I go to YouTube and look at what are the 10 saddest songs that you can come up with, I think Bonnie Raitt's is number one.
Really?
We have a few. The group that I saw the most when I was in college was The Band with all those guys, and we're doing one of their songs, which it's possibly the saddest love song I know, along with Bonnie's song. That's exactly
in lyric right. content, we're choosing some of the saddest material you could possibly find.
Well, and Phil, your musical background intrigues me. It seems like you kind of started out in punk rock, which can easily have some dour ballads too. But tell me, I guess, a little bit about your storyline.
Well, we called it garage band rock in those days, you know. So it was like, well, we're doing one of Ray Davies of the Kinks. We're doing one of his songs. But back in the day, we played You Really Got Me or All Day and All the Night, all that kind of stuff. You know, Psychotic Reaction. I went through the whole list with my brother who lives in Billings and was in the band as a guitarist. And then, you know, I mean, for me, the streams of music were parallel. I always studied classical music and I always played pop music. And then highly influenced by jazz and world music as well. And pretty much, I think, growing up in a little town, I didn't have anybody telling me that this music was the best music. You know, jazz is the best music. It's the only thing you can play. Or why mess around with anything except classical music or rock and roll? They were all there, and I was hungry for them all. So I've just kept that hunger. Those are the things that I do.
That's interesting. They didn't require you to find one specific genre and stick with it. I grew up in a small town, and if it wasn't punk rock, it just wasn't worth it. I missed out on a lot, right, including grunge. We can talk about that another time.
But Phil, I know your work, and when I think of your piano work particularly, I think of it as incredibly romantic, pictorial, representative of Montana. I mean, I think most of our listeners would say, oh, I love Phil Auberg's work, because you do have, I mean, your own compositions have a certain style.
Yeah, and I think that definitely comes from where I grew up and all those different influences that came together, because there's not really one thing that you can look at in my own music that you could say, well, that's the influence or that's the influence, kind of like the five blind men and the elephant, you know. It must be a classical composer because I heard him do his trio. You know, he must be a New Age composer, which I never called myself because I heard this. Or he must be a rocker because I heard him with Elvin Bishop, or a blues player because I heard him with Perry and the Pumpers, or whatever. You know, so I think the thing that's given me a lot of freedom is realizing that I am a mongrel and I take all those influences
proudly.
Proudly.
Yes. So both of you have incredible chops in terms of backgrounds in classical music and jazz. I'm wondering, Jenny, you teach classical piano, but do you ever perform?
No. You know, in fact, I might have mentioned this the last time I was on your show, that we met when I was 13, after I'd won the Young Artist Award and was debuting with the Billings Symphony. And that was a very traumatic experience for me. And I, which we'll tell that story on another show. But I took that trauma and through my whole piano career and was afraid of performing until the day I graduated from college with a degree. And went through all the performance seminars and did all the recitals and the district music festivals and all that stuff, and never really got over the fear of performing as a pianist. I've never had a fear of singing. I'd figure that one out. I can't explain it, but somewhere in my head, I separated those two things. I was a classical piano teacher. I'm a very traditional piano teacher. I teach a little bit of beginning jazz, but not too much. And I teach contemporary music the way I was taught, the way Kathy Honaker and Ralph Sappington kind of brought me up and as a singer. That's what I give to my students. And hardly ever do the two meet. So the last time I performed as a classical pianist was in 2001 for my senior recital when I was finishing my degree. I'm sure there's a therapy session in there somewhere, but, you know, that's the sense that I've made of those two worlds for
myself. So I'm putting a timeline together, and I think, Phil, the first time I heard you perform is shortly after we opened the Alberta Bear Theater, and you were touring and did a solo piano show. Do you remember back when that was?
I think that might have been the one. It snowed so much. Was that the one? There was a horrendous blizzard, and I think 100 people could make it to the theater. I barely could get in the door. I think that might be the time. Yeah, no, I was touring a lot in those days as a solo pianist. I was out a whole bunch. Not as much during the year as I had as a rock and roller. We were out 310 days the first year I toured with Elvin Bishop. So, yeah, that's probably the timeline. Before, like Jenny, I won the Young Artist Award with the Billings Symphony and played with the symphony when I was 17.
So that everyone was begins as a young artist with the Billings Symphony. We need to start a new show, Anna. What do you think? Where are they now?
You have very bizarrely similar background stories, starting classical piano at such a young age and then going on to this young artist competition, which I didn't know. Nice factoid. Thank you for that. And then I think where your paths might divert a bit, Phil, I mean, you've toured the world. Like you said, you were out with the Elvin Bishop Group for 300 plus days a year. You were out with Peter Gabriel. And of all the places in the world, you returned to Montana and maybe hear your storylines come back together. Mm-hmm. And what about Big Sky Country lured you back?
Well, you know, I was doing all those things, and for a lot of people, that would be the satisfying career. But I always felt there was something else. And during the I was a session player for a lot of years, playing on, 250 records or something, Kenny Rogers and Juice Newton and all these people. And really, that would be ideal for a lot of players. But I was always playing stuff that I had always played, my own music. And I would play that in the middle of breaks, and people would come up and say, "Why aren't you doing that?" And I'd say, well, that's a really good question. So then I did. And when I wrote my first solo record, High Plains, I was sitting in a little room that I had converted into a studio in Oakland, California, and I had a bas-relief map of Montana up above my upright piano. And I would look at that, and I would imagine where I was. And one of the pieces called The Big Open, I wrote, you know, which is really the area between, say, Billings and Stanford, Billings and Miles City, that whole area. I was looking at that, and I was imagining a storm blowing through the High Plains. And I just, so that was probably born out of homesickness, that whole record and the whole idea of writing landscape music. Although, as my brother Steve once said to me, you know, you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy.
So now, true.
Now, I hope you're not offended, but I still have that album and several others of yours, that it's my favorite music when I have a dinner party. That music is very soothing. Mm-hmm. It's very beautiful. It's on my top list for dinners.
Well, it's no, why would I be offended by it? I think that's great. You know?
It's only offensive if he is at dinner at your house.
Because then I'll be listening.
Exactly.
Right. You know, and I think a lot of that music was written, that early music was written to if you can make yourself feel better as a musician and as a composer, then you're doing something. And I was deadly homesick. And that is the music that made me think about home. But then as I started to compose more and more, I started to think about really what is it that I'm doing for people and why is it that I want to bring that sort of music for someone to listen to. And I wanted them to share the same kind of feelings that I had when I was looking out at the landscape. You know, I mean, and after that, there were a lot of records that were written called this and called that, called Glacier Park and called Yellowstone Park. I mean, they could have been written in Passaic, New Jersey, about Passaic, New Jersey. They didn't have anything to do with the landscape that I know. So I tried to get something of that High Plains, which we all share. I mean, in probably in this listening area, most of us share, except in western Montana where I live now.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how you capture Montana in sound. And obviously you've done it in your records, but when you're composing, I love that idea of homesickness, that you're missing something that you don't know any other way to reach but to find internally that longing back to something that you know.
How do you capture that? Well, space is part of it. You know, distance, the long view, the 100-mile stare.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And Jenny, certainly your musical path, it seems to be coalescing back to some of your roots and some of this more playful and fun nature that you have, but also to tie in your jazz, tie in your classical background and your incredible pipes into something that you truly love, back to just having fun. I just can think of you as a teenager rocking out to some of these great radio hits.
Yeah. For sure. It's fun to collaborate with someone that you just have spent decades really admiring. And let me be clear. I know that I'm the rookie in this collaboration. And it's so fun for me to have someone who's so masterful, first of all, try out my ideas. Or I'll say, how about we try this chord? And he says, yeah, let's try that. I'm surprised still every time. We've had, I don't know, half a dozen rehearsals together, and I don't know why I'm expecting him to say anything other than, yes, let's try your ideas. But that part is really fun for me. We played last night a concert and did a song by Alison Krauss that I have always thought of being has a landscape feel to it. And I don't perform it very often because it's really difficult to get that kind of big panoramic feeling, if you're not using, say, a whole orchestra to create all those layers and textures, except that Phil is able to do that on one instrument with 10 fingers. I don't really know how. I don't know what the technique is to build that kind of texture. I play that instrument, and I can't make things feel like that. And I think that that's what it always will come back to for me, is how a song feels. I really don't care what the song is. I don't care if it's a jazz standard or a Beethoven sonata or a Grammy award-winning pop song. I don't care. I care what it feels like. And if I'm able to elicit that feeling from an audience, then I'm willing to sing it. And there's something about this collaboration that is making that more possible.
Let me ask you about rehearsals, because I'm interested in, that just doesn't happen, making the feeling or finding the feeling. So when you're rehearsing, are you kind of composing as you go along? Are you deciding how this song is going to come together?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the songs have definitive performances. You know, if you do Angel Flying Too Close to the Ground, you think Willie Nelson. You can't help but think it. So part of it is getting away from that in some way. Don't try to sound like them. You try to sound like yourself. You try to bring what it is that the song means to you. Same way with Ray Davies and the Kinks. You know, we're doing Waterloo Station, which some people know as Waterloo Sunset. And the way the Kinks do it is, it's a brilliant melody, first of all. And the lyrics are just ambiguous in the great sense of great pop tunes. So you don't really know what he's talking about, but it's really intriguing. It's really interesting. So we tried to get to that. And then there's a little bit of what some film composers would call Mickey Mousing. It's like, okay, when he talks about dirty old river flowing through the night, okay, that's pretty cinematic. So I would try and figure out what did the Kinks do, which didn't really have anything to do with the lyric, and what can I do that maybe has something to do with the lyric.
There's a lot of songs that we've chosen that we keep describing as cinematic. There's a lot of imagery that gets attached to how we're doing these songs. And maybe that's a testament to Phil and how he plays. It just happens to be full of, like, it conjures up images when you hear him play.
Jenny, I know one of the songs that you're doing is Gnarls Barkley's Crazy. And it's one of those songs that when I first heard it, and I loved it, I loved the rhythm of it when I was exercising, I'd love to hear it, but I could hear it as a ballad. There was something in that music that made for a ballad. I'm so excited to hear what that must be like.
It's creepy. And it's crazy.
Aptly named.
Yeah. I had only really known that song as like a dance tune that you play at weddings, which, you know, sort of turns me off right there. But I never took the time to listen to the words. But if you slow them down, it becomes a wholly different experience. And so actually the accompaniment that we have come up with is pretty sparse in places, just to make sure that those lyrics come through. It's a really interesting song, and I mean, that man is kind of a genius.
I wanted to segue a bit into your communities. Jenny, you're living in Bozeman. Obviously, you make a living at teaching and performing. Have you found that as Bozeman grows, does the community's thirst for live performance and local music grow as well? I mean, I know that there's a lot of contention around Bozeman becoming a little bit of a overgrown mecca. So I was curious how you're seeing its impacts as a musician and a teacher.
Well, that development and growth is happening at the same time that I'm getting older and making different choices about my music. I think there was a time where I took every gig that came my way because I knew that that was important in developing my voice and my craft. And then there comes a point where you're weighing the, you know, what you're going to make at this wedding over the free time that you're going to have on a Saturday, and just different things become important. So I'm choosing to play music for a completely different set of criteria, one of which is I like feeling like the rookie. I like feeling like I'm kind of hanging on for dear life and learning everything I can from the person that, you know, is sitting next to me on the stage. I like arrangements that are different and interesting and unexpected, and that's what I want to pursue. I don't want to learn another 40 songs for someone's first wedding. You know, you know, that's
are
kind
songs
of the
different
cut and dry
for the
there,
second
right
wedding than they are for the first wedding.
I have done second weddings, if you can believe that. And the third is free. So if
you need a wedding, it here. Yeah. And Phil, for you, now you grew up in Chester and you are now living in Helena with your family. How have you seen, I guess, the broad community of Montana changing as you've been pretty much a global musician and choose to make your home here in Montana?
Yeah, and that is probably one of the big differences, is that there are a lot more professional musicians here now, and a lot more professional musicians who can actually make a living by playing in Montana. Sure. I was really surprised when I moved back.
And how long ago was that?
That was 18 years ago.
Oh, so
I think.
You've been here quite a good deal of time.
Yeah, and well, 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. My youngest son is 18, so we moved back when he was one. Really to give him that Montana life.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd be fly fishing a lot more than I am. But there's been a lot of really great work, a lot of commissions. You know, next year I'm playing again my piano quintet with the Cascade Quartet from Great Falls. You know, I wrote a piece for the trio that we have with Angela Ahn, Sarah Stallnaker. We play for the Montana Chamber Music Society. There's just been a lot of really things that I did not expect in my own life as a musician, a lot of composing, film work, commissions from groups that you wouldn't think you'd be commissioned from, like the Montana Farmers Union commissioned me to write a piece for their 100th. Just in my own life, I see a lot more work. Living in Helena, for example, there's live music at several venues every night. And that's kind of returning to the way Montana was. I talked to old-timers, and we had this sort of revival of the Ozark Club, which was an African-American jazz club in Great Falls. And when I talked to the people there, there was music all the time. In West Yellowstone, there were something like 7 clubs that had live music all week long back in the day. Seems that we're returning to that, which is really welcome and really great. And there are a lot of great players. Then you have 11th and Grant with Montana PBS. You know, I thought, okay, well, when I first heard that they were going to do the show, I thought, okay, well, they got about 2 years. What is it, like the 11th or 12th year now? Yeah, something?
Yeah. It's pretty incredible. Yeah. There's so much fodder out there. And good point that, you know, communities in Montana, from what I've learned studying just the rise of, let's say, our local theater, they were founded around primarily beer and theater. So, you know, you've got to have a little bit of entertainment for people to really stake your claim and call it a town. So if you were a city with an opera house and a brewer that stuck around, you were definitely going somewhere. So places like Helena, Great Falls, Billings, Butte, they all were really kings of the entertainment world.
I am so old, I remember every weekend there were bars to go and dance to live music. And I was primarily country music, but every place had a band. And then in the 80s and 90s, it was dance music, and there was no more dancing. But I find it interesting in Billings, and I'm sure it's true in Bozeman, there's music every night. Mm-hmm. There are just a wonderful number of venues and a variety of music that maybe in the last 5-10 years, yep, has really blossomed, and it's wonderful to see.
Mm-hmm. And it's good to hear that's happening in your communities as well. Well, I really appreciate both of you coming in, chatting with us about this new collaboration. We're pretty excited to hear what comes next for you guys. So please keep us in the loop. Jenny, Phil, so nice to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains is produced by Corby Skinner, Anna Page, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Additional funding provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information on Resounds is available at ypradio.org.